Thank you for the invitation. So today I'm going to talk about the super twist OB4s and related gauge theory amplitudes and the topological strings. So basically, this is motivated by the recent development, especially led by Edward Witten, about the twist space and gauge theory amplitudes. So this is the work I did in collaboration with Soojung Lee, and then this is the half theory number. Okay, so here is the outline of the term. My understanding is that probably many of the audiences here are minimally exposed about the twist string. So I would like to have a rather lengthy discussions or the introductions about the twist space and the related helicity amplitudes. At least, some necessary ingredients to work out or to explain the notion of the super twist OB4s. I guess, once we understand what is the super twist spaces, then it is relatively easy to introduce the super twist OB4s, even though the physical meaning is not that clear. So I'm going to explain the helicity amplitudes and the twister space at the first section. And on the second section, I'd like to introduce the mirror symmetry for CP3/4, which is the super twister space where most people are interested in nowadays, and also closely related to N=4 super space Young mirrors. And so the reason I introduced this mirror symmetry is that I'm going to also use this mirror symmetry for the other gauge theories or the related super twister spaces. So, and on the second section, I'm introducing the Kuiper gauge theories. So basically, the motivation of this whole work is to understand the similar correspondence between topological string and the super twist specific super twister spaces to the low dimensional cases. And the clear examples, or the easy examples subject to such generalizations are the Kuiper gauge theories, where most of us are quite familiar with. So I'm going to explain a few of the examples of the Kuiper gauge theories, and then I'm going to try to explain what the calculate several related amplitudes related to these Kuiper gauge theories. And finally, then I'd like to conclude what we can learn from all this exercise and what we are going to do. So these are the outline of the talk. Okay, so here are the introduction. So when you talk about the helicity amplitudes, then we should define the helicities, and also we should define the momentum. Then it is usual, it is convenient to use this kind of the Lorentz group decompositions and using this spinor notations. So I'm going to use the Lorentz group in four dimension, complexified, which is isomorphic to SL2 times SL2. And then we have this finite dimensional representation P comma Q, whether P comma Q could be integers or the half integers. And so, in this notations, we can denote the negative chirality spinors, half comma zero, to be lambda A, where A runs from 1 to 2. While the positive chirality spinors, 0 comma half, could be denoted by the dotted spinors, with A dot runs from 1 and 2. Now, the indices of this spinor indices, the spinor indices could be raised and lowered using the usual the epsilon symbols. And then we can define the inner product for the negative chiral spinors and similarly for the positive chirality spinors. To avoid the notational clashes, I would like to use the inner product for the chirality spinors for this bracket. And then for the positive chirality spinor inner products, I'm going to use this notation. Okay, so these are the usual conventions. And then vector representations of SO3 work, 3,1, this could be denoted by half and half. And then this is the usual relation between the dot and undotted notation and the usual four vector notations, which is connected by the usual sigma matrices, which has some Pauli matrix components in it. So this is the some expansions. Now, in many of the cases of calculating the Helicity amplitudes, I mean, in all of the cases, I mean, we are interested in the external particles to be massless. And so in this notation, we should like to know how can we define or denote the massless particles or the Lie-like vectors. So the formula notation, I mean, the well-known relations between the p-square and the determinant of the this p-a-a dot, one can see that immediately that p mu is Lie-like if and only if the determinant vanishing. So if the determinant vanishing, and then one can see that this p-a-a dot could be decomposed in terms of the negative chirality spinner and the positive chirality spinners. Now, but this decomposition is not unique. There are some ambiguities of the scaling with the non-zero complex numbers where lambda is raised by U and then lambda tilde is lowered by U inverse. Okay, so this could be, Lie-like vectors could be decomposed in this way using two spinners. And then P dot Q could be written in this way. And so now, in order to consider the gluon amplitudes of the QCD, in order to specify the Lie-like vectors, we also should specify the helicities. And so, some polarization vectors. The most convenient way in terms of the calculation is to use to represent the additional degrees of freedom using helicities. Instead of the user polarization vectors, which would appear in the user electrodynamic, electrodynamics. So, it turns out that it's very much useful to label the external gauge bosons by their helicities plus one, or the minus one. So I sometimes use the plus one or minus one, or equivalent notation could be the plus or the minus. Okay, so here we have we denote the momentum in terms of the two spinners. Now, how can we incorporate, incorporate the chirality, the helicities? There is a simple way to do that, respecting the gauge invariances of the polarization vectors as well. So here, if we have some negative helicity polarization vector, and the way we can denote them is, pick any positive chirality spinner and then use these notations. So we pick some representative or some fixed positive chirality spinner, and then we know that if we have these specific vectors, then we can have the, this could be decomposed by the lambda a and the lambda tilde a dot. And then, so given fixed or the reference the positive chirality spinners, we can form this kind of the objects. And it turns out that, this could be, this represents the helicity minus one objects. So here, this is the user scaling when we decompose the momentum in terms of the two chiral spinners. And then it turns out that this epsilon a dot is scaled like lambda square. And it turns out this the specific powers of this lambda under the scaling is related to the helicity of the particular the particles we are interested in. So one can check that once we have, this polarization, this helicity, and in addition to the previous momentum we introduced, then one can check that the associated the gauge field f mu nu, which in this way it could be written in terms of the p mu and the epsilon nu in the usual notation. Can be, one can show that, the resulting F mu nu is self-dual. So helicity minus one represents the self-dual fields, while helicity plus one represents the anti-self-dual fields. And similarly, we can introduce the positive, the helicities instead of the negative helicities. We can just interchange the roles of the positive chirality spinners and the negative chirality spinners. Okay. So using, this equipment, using these notations, so we are given the momentum in terms of the spinners, and we are given the helicities in terms of the spinners, then one can calculate the helicity amplitudes of the QCD. It turns out that those amplitudes obey this kind of simple relation. So We are introducing the momentum for the each of the I particles, and those are denoted by the lambda A and the lambda tilde A. And so the resulting amplitudes are the homogeneous polynomials with respect to specific lambda IA and the lambda tilde I variables. And this specific power appearing here represents have information about the specific helicities. Here, I mean, we have this helicity minus one scales like lambda square, and the similar behaviors appears in the amplitudes as well. So more specifically, we can decompose this A hat and then extracting off the user, the momentum conservation factors, and then we are more interested in those amplitudes. So I'm going to show you the simplest cases of such amplitudes in the next transparencies. Okay, so these are the simplest examples of the MHV amplitudes. So the convention you're choosing are that the convention you're choosing is that all particle momenta are the outgoing, and then we are interested in some particular combination where we have just two plus helicity gluons, and then the remaining things are having the negative helicities. It turns out that, I mean, if we have just the zero or the one positive helicity of the particles, then the resulting amplitudes are vanishing. So this is the smallest smallest number of the positive helicity particles could appear, and it turns out that the amplitudes contain, I mean, could be expressed in terms of very, I mean, the simple formulas like this one. The one interesting thing is that, so we have the suitable power factors of the coupling constant, and then it is expressed in this way. Of course, I mean, we should introduce the additional trace factors coming from the color factors, and also we should consider the cyclic permutations. But the important, I mean, thing appearing in this formula is that the expressions are just a function of the negative chirality spinners and not involve the positive chirality spinners. So here, the equations or the expressions are holomorphic. So because, but I mean, this kind of the holomorphic, I mean, expressions, probably, I mean, we could see in the context of some other instanton expansions of the string theory. So if we consider some the string instanton in a heptatic string, and then one can see that if we wrap around some holomorphic curves, then we can obtain the instanton corrections. So it turns out that these holomorphicities are closely related to dependent phenomena, and it turns out that, I mean, this kind of the expressions could be obtained from topological strings after we take account of the effect of the instantons. So, I mean, so these holomorphic expressions are the one of the important motivations written is introducing these topological strings on 2B string, topological strings on the super twist spaces, and also consider the instanton corrections. Okay, so these are the expressions. Now, I'm going to now explain the emergence of the twister spaces. This twister spaces is, I mean, if we look at the twister spaces, then in that case, I mean, the conformal invariance is kind of built in. So if we consider the conformal invariance, I'm not going to show you some details of how this conformal symmetry is acted on such amplitudes. But it turns out that the important point is that if we consider this conformal invariance, and this is more clearly expressed if we consider the projective twister space, which consists of the lambda A and the mu A dot. The relation between lambda A and the lambda tilde A dot and I mean the relation between the previous variables of the lambda A and the lambda A dot, lambda tilde A dot, and this new variables is that in the simplest cases, I mean, it depends on which signatures we are going to use in the notation of the twister spaces. But in the simplest cases, I mean, roughly speaking, this new variables mu A dot is related to the Fourier transform of the lambda tilde A dot variables, which appeared in the expression of the momentum space. Okay, so if we consider the Fourier transform, or the analog of the Fourier transform for all those parameter spaces, and then we obtain the projective, I mean, twister space, which in this case, it is a CP3. And then the scattering amplitudes for a particle of the helicity H obeys, I mean, this kind of relation. So there is a sign changes when we use the lambda tilde A dot. That is due to the Fourier transform we are doing here. And then there are some additional the overall factors appearing in the resulting amplitudes. Now, and probably, I mean, you can refer the paper by Edward Witten about the twister space. And then you can see that once we work in this twister space, then the actions of the conformal invariance, or the conformal symmetry, is very simple. And it is expressed just in terms of the first order differential operators. So that is the one motivation to introduce the CP3, or the simplest twister space. Okay, so we are now working on the CP3, and this is the simplest examples of the twister space. Now, then you can see that this A tilde is the homogeneous, I mean, the polynomials with respect to lambda A and the mu A dot, with respect to, I mean, with the simple, I mean, the power factors like this one. And so, in the other words, I mean, in mathematical terms, this A tilde is called the section of the suitable line bundles, which is denoted by the O of 2H minus 2. This is nothing but to say that these are the functions of homogeneous polynomials of degree minus 2H minus 2. So if we vary the helicities and then we vary the overall degrees of, I mean, the overall degrees of this lambda and the mu A dot appearing in those expressions. Okay, so if we use this CP3, then the gluon amplitudes could be expressed in very simple terms. Now, basic interest of ours is to consider the generalization of these QCD amplitudes into n equal 4 supersymmetry. And one might wonder, how can we consider the whole particles of n equal 4 supersymmetry, I mean the matrix particles within the n equal 4 supermultiply, and whether I mean the resulting amplitudes could be expressed in terms of some kind of the n equal 4 supersymmetric formulations. And in order to do that, in addition to introducing the twister spaces, we also should consider the super twister spaces. So that's why people are interested in the super twister spaces. The way we can introduce those is that in addition to the external particle momenta, which is denoted by, I mean, which are denoted by the lambda A and the lambda A tilde A dot, we can introduce the spinless anti-commuting variables eta A. Now, the important thing is that this eta A, this spinless, I mean, the anti-commuting variables, is transformed as a 4 bar of SU 4 over R. And this 4 bar of SU 4, I mean, this SU 4 over R is identified, could be identified with the R symmetry of the N equal 4 super Yang-Mills. So once we introduce, I mean, this NA, I mean, this spinless variables, then it could automatically incorporate the R symmetry of the N equal 4 super Yang-Mills. And by doing that, we can write down the amplitudes of the N equal 4 supersymmetric theories for the matrix sectors. One can incorporate those easily. So I'm going to show you how to do that. So if we introduce these new variables of the eta A, and then the helicity operator could be written in this way. So roughly speaking, the helicity operator counts the number of how many eta A is appearing for a specific particle. So if we consider the case order in eta IA, so I mean this I represents the specific particle, then if we have the case order, that denotes the ith particle as the helicity 1 minus k over 2. And so the scattering amplitudes, A hat, instead of writing explicitly the helicity of the each of the particles, we can, once we introduce, I mean, this variable is eta, and then all of the scattering amplitudes of various helices could be expressed, I mean, in a simple way. And so this is the uniform expression applying for the whole n equal 4 supermultiplets. And in terms of, I mean, this one, then, I mean, once we introduce this eta, then all of the amplitudes could be written in a simple way like this one. So probably you might remember in the previous transparencies, I show you the MHV amplitudes for the gluon amplitudes, and then that contains this 1 over lambda I and lambda I plus 1. This is related to some propagator factors in the QCD calculations. Now then, this is the usual momentum factors. Now, you might remember there are some additional factors in the numerators. Then that could be just observed in terms of this, the fermionic delta functions. And if we are interested in some amplitudes which have some definite helicities, all we have to do is to collect suitable powers of the thetas. So more specifically, these thetas contain the lambda I and the eta I. And this eta I, the number of the eta I we are collecting, they denote the helicities of some specific particles. So once we collect the suitable numbers of the etas, then they will also pick up the same numbers of the lambda. And then if we collect all such terms, then those automatically give the expressions for the scattering amplitudes involving their specific the particle with the specific helicities. Now again, it is convenient, convenient to see the whole superconformal invariance structures of the scattering amplitudes by Fourier transforming this eta A variables again. So once you do that, then this would consist of, I mean, the parameter spaces we denote before, this lambda and the mu eta, they already consist of the CP3. Now, we have this conjugate variables with respect to this eta A. And then this whole thing could consist of the CP3/4. And then this is the famous super twisted spaces people are now interested in. And so, again, I mean, the same story. Now, if you consider such super twisted spaces, then the superconformal invariance of the n equal 4 super Yang-mills, PSU2, 2/4, those generators became the first order differential operators. So the superconformal invariance structures are very clearly seen in this formalism. So superconformal invariance is kind of built in this super twisted spaces. Now, as an example of using this formulation, I'm going to show you how can you calculate the MHV amplitudes involving two external fermions and the n-2 gluons. If we denote the Q to have the helicity -half, and the Q prime to have the helicity +half, and the gluon alpha has the helicity +1, and then from the previous transparencies, we should pick up the three etas for the helicity -half and the one etas for the helicity helicity +half, and then the four powers of the etas for the gluon alpha, which is the helicity +1. So altogether, we are consuming these 8 variables of the eta. So we are using all of these zeta 8 expressions when we collect those terms. So after that, the expressions we obtain is as follows. So we have the specific q alpha to the cube, and then q prime alpha. So all we have to do is just collect the suitable terms of the etas in the previous expressions. Then one can automatically read off the resulting amplitudes. So once we calculate the specific amplitudes within, or the, for the particles within the n equal 4 supermultiplet, then the remaining, the associated amplitudes, for the other particles within the supermultiplet is kind of automatic. Okay, so we should go to the Witten's proposal. Now, it is an intuition of Edward Witten, which is that if we consider this MHV amplitudes, then this could be reproduced if we consider topological 2D string theory on CP3/4, and they include the D-instanton effects. Now, we are more interested in, so here, basically our main interests are concerning the open string sectors living on CP3/4, and then we should introduce some kind of the D-brains on those space and the suitable actions for those. So the D-brains appearing in those super twister spaces of topological strings are almost space filling, but the funny thing is that the boundary has the pi by 4/0, which means is that when you consider these open string calculations, the vertex operators for the Fermi terms, they just, only the psi appearing, and there would be no the psi bar dependencies on those boundaries. So if we follow those rules, even though the physical interpretation of this, this deep brain are not clear, but if we consider these physical states, and then this DZ denotes the CP3 directions, and so then we have this psi dependence along the Fermionic directions of the CP3/4. And so one could, in principle, expand in terms of the DZ bar and the psi A variables. Now, the interesting thing is that if we introduce, this A fields appearing in this D brain, living in D brain, then one can see that this AI bar is kind of so this is the psi A, which transforms a 4 of the SU4R. And then we have also, this transforms as kind of the 6 of SU4R, and so on. And then those conjugate variables have the same R symmetry structures as would appear in the N equal 4 super Young-Mills multiply. So in this case, it is relatively easy, while it's very tempting to identify those fields appearing in those expansions with the space-time field, which appears in the physical states of N equal 4 super Young-Mills, which has, the specific heuristic contents. And it turns out that, those identifications are correct ones. And once we identify the space-time fields of the N equal 4 super Young-Mills with the fields appearing in the twister spaces, and that would be the right correction, the right identifications. And we are going to use, these specs later on. How can we define some super twister orbifolds? And the associated actions is given by the user Chun Simon, the holomorphic Chun Simon gauge theories defined on this basis, where we have, CP3/4, but with the psi by equal 0. And it turns out that if we expand them in this one, then we will obtain the actions which describe the self-dual Young-Mills actions appearing in the previous literatures. So roughly, if we consider only this kind of the D-brain types, and then what we could obtain are the self-dual sectors of the QCD amplitudes. And in order to obtain the other sectors, coming from the intersection between the self-dual and the anti-self-dual sectors, we should introduce something, and that could be compensated or that could be explained by the additional D-instanton effects. So that is the main achievements in the Witten's. Yes. No. I think, let's see. Because, we are considering the holomorphic Chun Simon gauge series. So that's why, we just use the DZ bar or the DZ when we express this series. So it's just the holomorphicities. Yeah, right. So this is kind of the holomorphic variables living in, what should I say? this is the fields appearing in the Hormozd Trans Simon gauge series and twister spaces. And yes?
Can you compute the metric that
and equal for what?
There is a flat metric.
Flat metric?
Yes. So phi BC.
Yes.
We know that phi BC has a flat metric.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Can you see a sign for this flat metric in this equation for
S? If you extend, I mean, this one, then you will obtain the self-tier, the sectors of the Young Mills, or the closely related to that actions. So I think you can do it. Now, I'm not sure about whether the effect of the flammetry is the combination of the self-tier sectors and the anti-self-tier sectors. But at least, I mean, from the expansion of this one, you can see the self-tier part of this, of the metric of the scalars. So I think you can do it. Also, I mean, if you include the additional d-instanton effects explaining the anti-self-tier sectors, then definitely you can see that. So probably, I mean, I have a too long introduction, but so I'm going to be rather quick. So the one last thing, I mean, before I'm going to introduce the Kibo gauge theories, probably I should say about something about the mirror symmetries. It turns out that this CP3/4 has the linear Sigma model descriptions. And so the thing is that we have, I mean, the linear Sigma models of the super twister spaces is described by the U1 gauge theory with the 4 bosonic and the 4 fermionic chiral fields, which I denote the pi I and the theta I, where the d term is expressed in this way. So at each of these the fields, I mean, the charges are just the plus 1 for both the fermions and the bosons. And then in this case, we should consider the super Calabi-Yau conditions, and it is given by the super trace of the Q is 0. So it means is that when you add the charges of the bosons, we just add, and while if we consider the if we consider contributions for the fermions, then we have some additional minus signs. So here we have the four fields of the charge plus 1. So the contribution for this one is the plus 4 for the bosons, and then there are additional 4 fermionic fields, and we also have the minus 4. So the total super trace Q equals 0. So this is the super Calabi-Yau conditions, which should be satisfied if this linear Sigma model should describe the super Calabi-Yau in the infrared. And
is there a natural way to describe the
Hormozd free forms in where? Yeah, yeah. I think, so if we consider the CP3/4, and then we can just have the four forms coming from the CP3 direction, and plus the additional four fermionic differential forms, and combined together they form the Hormozd forms. Okay. Now, once we introduce these linear Sigma models, then one can consider some mirror descriptions for this CP3/4. So this is very closely related. I mean, the formula isn't very close to the bosonic calculations. So what you have to do is consider the twister chiral multiples associated with the bosonic variables as well as the fermionic variables. So in this way, now we introduce two kinds of the bosonic variables. So then these are the usual superpotentials appear in the mirror descriptions of the linear Sigma model for the usual bosonic case. Now, because here we have the fermionic variables instead of the bosonic ones, we should compensate, those differences, and those differences could be compensated by introducing additional two kinds of the fermionic fields. So if we calculate the central charges for the systems before and after these mirror transformations, then by introducing this additional fermionic matrix, we could match those things. And so these are the only modifications once we introduce this Fermionic fields. So this is the meter of the CP3-4. And then starting from this one, one can work out what would be the... So by doing some calculations, I mean, starting from the previous expressions, one can massage those expressions and to see that the resulting expressions could be simplified in this way if we consider some suitable reparametrizations, which says that the middle of the CP3/4, this could be, I mean, this is the supercalabial hypersurface which is expressed in this way. So basically, I mean, we have the some the exponential times the lambda and the d lambda appearing here. So essentially, I mean, this is a delta function. So the good thing about this one is that if it goes to t goes to minus infinity, then this this is just nothing but the local description of the quadric in CP3/3 square, which was considered by Edward Witten in relation to the n equal 4 super Yang-Mills. The way the n equal 4 super Yang-Mills appearing in this CP3/3 square is that for this part, some particular helicity, say the plus helicity particles are leaving, and the other part, the minus helicities are leaving. And so the user Z2 symmetry of the between the positive helicities and negative helicities are just a simple exchange of these two factors of the CP3/3. So we are later interested in this, the interchange of the positive helicity and negative helicity in the simplest, I mean, in the other cases. But somehow we could not see, I mean, this kind of the phenomena, where those Z2 symmetries is kind of the manifest in this the n equal 4 meter, which is just the exchange of the xi and the ya. And then some suitable parametrization of the additional Fermionic fields. So this is the one particular the character of this the simplest case of the middle of the CP3/4. Okay. So these are for the n equal 4 super Yang-Mills cases. Now then, we should think of how can we generalize those things into lower supersymmetric cases. So we looked for, I mean, several possibilities, and then we have settled down into the Kuiper gauge theories. So I'm going to explain, I mean, those. Now, in order to identify the clear correspondence between the Kuiper gauge theories and some possible candidates for the super twist OB force, we should introduce a slightly, I mean, we should consider some slight different way to obtain those gauge theories. So I'm going to review those things. Now, if we consider the U of 2n gauge theories with n equal 4 super Yang-Mills, then I'm going to consider the simplest Kuiper gauge theories, which is the usual, I mean, C2 mod Z2 OB fold. Now, the way I expressed this C2 OB fold action is that I'm going to use some particular actions for the SU4, the matrices. So if I consider this one, and then for this C2 actions, there are associated chain pattern factors which acts on the U of 2n. So once we are given these actions, then one can calculate what kind of the spectrums we are left with. So gauge boson should be invariant on the action of the chain pattern factors so that we can obtain the UN times the UN gauge group. Now, the gauge nodes, remember that, I mean, this lambda acts on the SU4 indices, so that for the 1 and 2, the lambda A picks up the additional minus sign, while for the 3 and 4 directions, lambda A is just invariant under the action of the chain pattern factors. So here we have the lambda A transforms by fundamental, and here lambda A just adjoins of the UN times UN. Now, once we denote or specify the action along the SU4, then it will decide what kind of, then it will decide for the more complicated transformations. For example, if we consider scalar fields, so basically this is the antisymmetric representations with respect to SU4, and so we have these two antisymmetric indices. So basically then the scalar fields, the action of the quiver, the combination, how this the SU4 directions appearing here. So for example, if I consider, so if one and two, so this, we have the six possibilities, and then it can express in this way. So the rule is that this sigma A, we should have the sigma I equals minus one wherever, these indices belong to one and two, and then plus one for the indices belong to three and four. So if we collect all of those possibilities, then we can obtain, these expressions. Now one can see that we have the two plus signs among six variables, and then four minus signs for, the other scalar fields. Now you might recognize those four. The usual starting point to obtain the spectrum of the d-brains on such quivers are usually just starting from the scalar actions. So if we consider the spectrum of the d3 brains on sigma z2 times the c, and the usually the z2 is expressed in terms of the z1 goes to minus z1 and the z2 goes to minus z2. And if we consider this flipping of the signs, then those are reflected for the four signs appearing in the scalars. So that is the usual starting point. Now I'm changing the rules so that I consider the fermionic contents first, and then the remaining the representations are followed by the actions on the fermions. Okay. So in the previous transparencies, I identified the space-time fields of the Young mirrors with the fields appearing in the holomorphic Chern-Simon gauge fields living in the twister spaces. And so then here we have, this corresponds to the gauge fields, and this corresponds to the fermionic fields, and then this corresponds to the scalar fields. Now then, it is obvious, it is tempting to conjecture that the obvious orbifold actions corresponding to the previous case of the Z2, the quiver gauge theories, I just consider this kind of action. So if we have the A is 1 and 2, then just flip the sign for the psi A, and then remaining, then the other components are just left invariant for the other directions. So this is the same thing as consider the Z2 orbifold action for this SU4 directions. So if we identify the specific actions of orbifold actions along SU4 with the orbifold actions appearing in the psi A directions, then basically we identify the SU4 appearing in the Chern-Simon gauge fields in the super twister spaces with the SU4 R symmetries appearing in the N equal 4 super Young mirrors. So this is basically our proposal for the this is our proposal that if we consider this kind of thing, then we obtain the so-called the CP3/4 modulus Z2, which is the super twist orbifold. And if we consider the topological strings on this super twist orbifold, then that would reproduce the gluon, the various amplitudes of the matrix sectors of the N equal 2 quiver gauge theories. And you are going to show some examples later. How can you calculate those amplitudes? So at least, for the open string sectors, we have some consistent pictures that this is the right description to deal with. Now, as I told you before, we did some other exercise related to the linear signal models of the Z2 super orbifold. Now, in order to construct this linear ceiling models of the Z2 super OB fold, then we have the two components. One is the user U1 part, which describes CP3/4, which is the super twisted spaces. Then somehow we should consider what the incorporate this additional Z2 OB fold action, which is given by in this term. So you might recognize that, I mean, this the Fermi variables, I mean, if those Fermi variables were bosonic ones, then this is nothing but the user C2 minus Z2 OB fold for the bosonic cases. And then the argument that this is the really Z2 OB fold kind of, I mean, follows through the same logic. So if we consider this kind of actions, and if we are concentrated on T's very negative regions, then what happens is that the theta 4 square appearing in the previous transparency takes a large bev so that it breaks the U1 to the Z2, so that the resulting OB, I mean the resulting structure is that CP3 slash 4 is divided by the Z2. Now, this holds if you consider very negative T regions. And so that is the OB fold limit we are considering. Now, if we consider T is very positive, then that should probably correspond something like some lower phase in analogy to the bosonic ones. But we do not know what kind of, what are the physical meanings of this resulting, the super manifold. But basically, we are living in this one. Now, if we consider the LG mirrors, then the same exercise could be done. And then in addition to the usual expressions appearing in the CP3 slash 4 cases, we have some additional expressions appearing from the Z2 actions. Now, unfortunately in these cases, we don't know the precise meaning of this LG mirror, because somehow in the previous case of the CP3/4, we have the super Calabi-Yau surface interpretation. I mean, in those cases, we obtained the super Calabi-Yau surface interpretation. But here, unfortunately, I mean, because of these additional factors, messes up this kind of the surface interpretations. And so we do not know what is the precise meaning, what is the physical, I mean, what kind of the physical object or the geometric object we are dealing here for the corresponding LG mirrors. And also, I told you that for the N equal 4 cases, the interchange of the chirality spinners and, the chirality states in the negative, positive chirality states and some negative chirality states, those Z2 symmetries are realized in very simple terms. But here, it is also not clear that those symmetries are realized in those cases. We know that a priori, those symmetries should be there because we are dealing with the N equal 2 systems of Yang-Mills. At least, those Z2 symmetries, flipping the chirality, the positive helicities into the negative helicities, should be here, but somehow it is not, at least, apparent in this kind of formalism. So it might be interesting to work out or to understand better this kind of the hidden Z2 symmetry in the current context. But we don't know the answers, unfortunately. Now, probably, if we consider this kind of LG mirrors, then we should have some geometric geometric information, even though we do not know the geometry in general for the super manifold or the super OB fold. But by considering some kind of the analogy of the cohomology of the chiral rings or those super versions, it might be, it might shed some light about understanding the twisted sectors. Now, all of the things I said about the super twisted OB folds, that is restricted to the open string sectors, because basically from that open string sectors, we are identifying the possible candidates of the super twisted OB folds related to the Cuba gauge theories. Now, but it is not clear how can you deal with the resulting closed string sectors. Definitely, if we consider some kind of the OB fold actions, at least in the bosonic case, then we are expecting some kind of the twisted sector should appear. And so, but I mean, here, I mean, we don't have any clues what kind of the twisted sectors we should introduce in the closing sectors. So by considering these LG meters in more detail, maybe we can have some clues about those. But so far, I mean, we don't have any clues. So it might be an interesting exercise to work with. Okay, so that is the n equal 2 cases. Now, it is also relatively straightforward to work out the examples of the n equal 1 case and the n equal 0 cases. And so I'm going to show you the non-supersymmetric cases, so which might be useful in calculating the loop amplitudes of those amplitudes, because somehow the non-supersymmetric cases are different from the supersymmetric cases. So this might be a good testing bed to test, I mean, those structures. So this is the examples of the n equal 0 theories.
Going back to the
Mother
with the
picture,
what's the advantage of moving the
let's say. Well, I mean, if you go to one thing I know, I mean, there are lots of the things, but one thing I know is that instead of considering the topological B models, if we consider the topological A models, and then if we go to the mirror cases, then all of these instanton corrections of the topological A models are incorporated in the mirror pictures. And so probably we can expect the similar things here. So especially if we consider some topological A model amplitudes on the super manifolds, then by going to the LG mirrors, then we can obtain the simple answers. And actually, I mean, the super manifold, I mean, those are first considered by the people who are interested in mirrors of the rigid Calabi-Yau. And it turns out that the mirrors of the rigid Calabi-Yau is described by the super manifold. So in that sense, I mean, at least for those cases, these topological A amplitudes for this rigid Calabi-Yau could be obtained by considering the mirror of the LG mirrors. And I expect that a similar thing should happen in here as well. So yeah. In terms of that problem, I mean, in terms of the calculating the gluon amplitudes or the MHCB amplitudes, probably by considering these mirrors, it doesn't help much. But I expect that by considering the LG mirrors, we could get some useful information about the resulting geometries, not for the open string sectors. Probably, I mean, you should have some more information about the closed string sectors. Right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. The thing is that, in those cases, I mean, the calculation is very simple because we are interested in the open string sectors. And for the open string sectors, what you have to do is just consider the field theory of fold, which means is that by introducing the suitable projections, then we can obtain the resulting amplitudes. So the procedure should be relatively straightforward. So we can do it. Okay, so if we consider this kind of the actions along the SU4, where the omega is just I, and then this is the suitable chain pattern factors appearing the UO4N, and then we should have the trace gamma should be zero in order to retain the superconformal invariance conditions. Then it turns out that the gauge group is the UN2B4, and then the four bifermions behaving in this way. So we have the bunch of the bifundamentals in this way. And then we have the additional adjoint scalars, which should behave in this way. So here we have the I appearing in the chain pattern factors, and here we have the minus one. So we have the six scalars behaving slightly different, I mean, still toward the bifundamentals. Now, in order to match, I mean, in order to have the supersymmetries in the spectrum, so that at least, I mean, we have some matches between the fermions and the bosons. But here you can see that these fermions behave differently from scalars and the bosons. So then we cannot match the fermionic value, I mean the fermionic degrees of freedoms with the bosonic degrees of freedoms. So clearly we can see that the resulting Cooper gauge theories are non-supersymmetric. But relevant topological string theory could be easily defined. So what you have to do is, following the logic of the n equal 2 cases, just to consider the B model, defined the super OB fold, Cp 3/4, modified by Z4, with the action psi A, goes to exponential minus I pi over 2 psi A. The sign factors appearing here is related to the fact that whether we are considering the 4 bar or the 4 of the SU4. So here it is relevant whether proper to consider this psi A transforming as a 4 bar of the SU4, which corresponds to the actions of SU4 acting on 4. So if we identify those things, then one can relatively easily work out this the B models or the super OB fold, and one can see that, I mean, this is again satisfied the super Calabi conditions if we go to the linear sigma models. So then the story would be the same. We might consider some LG mirrors for those, even though we don't know what to do for those cases. But anyway, I mean, we can construct them. So this is the simple examples of the correspondence between the non-supersymmetric gauge theories and the super-twist OB folds. Okay, so given those formalisms, maybe we can try to calculate the multi-pattern amplitudes for the Cooper gauge theories. Now, the new ingredients for those Cooper gauge theories is that we can have the bifundamentals quirks for, say, SUN1 times SUN2. Because we are dealing with the three amplitudes, here it doesn't matter whether we are working on the UN1 times UN2 or the SUN1 times SUN2. So suppose that we are considering the amplitudes containing two bifundamental quarks, and then we have the N1 number of the gauge bosons of SUN1 factors, and then the N2 tilde factors of the SUN2 gauge bosons. And then we have the usual color factors, where Xi and Yi are denoting the generators of the SUN1 and SUN2. And then after extracting of those things, we have the real amplitudes we are interested in. Then we also have the permutation factors within the SUN1, I mean, the N1 gauge bosons, and then N2 of the SUN2 gauge bosons. Okay, so here, after the usual three-level calculations, we obtain the amplitudes like this one. So here we have the Q alpha cube and the Q bar alpha, and that denotes the fact that we are considering the Q2 have the helicity minus half, and the Q bar has the helicity plus half. And then we are choosing among these N1 plus N2 tilde gauge bosons, and we can denote the specific, I mean, gauge boson, which has a minus helicity, to be alpha. And then these factors are just extract, I mean, could be extract, I mean, this is related to those helicities. And then the remaining things are related to some propagator factors. Okay, so the answer we should, I mean, the question we should ask is that this could be reproduced from the n equal 4 multi-pattern amplitudes with a suitable OB fold projection. No. I mean, so if given the SUN1, then I mean, we can arbitrary many, we can include arbitrary many the gluon amplitudes as well.
The gauge theory is more uniform
and
only for the case in which they are equal.
Ah, yes, that's right. But I mean, since we are dealing with the three-level amplitudes, it doesn't matter. So, I mean, one thing we should do is probably, I mean, go to UN, I mean, more precisely speaking, I mean, we should go to the UN times UN. But since, I mean, if we consider the three-level amplitudes, I mean, it doesn't matter whether we have the same N1 and N2. No, I don't think so. Because given gauge factors, say, SUN1 and the SUN2, we can introduce the arbitrary numbers of the small N1 gauge bosons. So it doesn't matter, I mean, how many numbers are here. Okay, so what we are going to show is that the amplitudes appearing here could be reproduced from the N equal 4 multi-pattern amplitudes with a suitable OB4 projection. So once we show this one, then we know that the N equal 4 multi-pattern amplitudes are also obtained from the topological strings. And we know that how can we identify the orbifold projections of the N equal 4 and the orbifold projections of the topological strings. So if we consider the same isomorphic orbifolding procedures for the topological strings, then one should say that, one would argue that we could obtain the same amplitudes in the topological strings as well. So this is what we are going to show in the next transparency. So what we have to do is just to consider the suitable projections among the N equal 4. So if we consider the gauge bosons at SUN1, then that contains the upper left part, and we denote the gauge bosons of SUN2 in the right lower part. And then the bifundamentals consist of the off-diagonal components. Okay? So then if we try to calculate the MHV amplitudes with the two external fermions and the M plus N gluons, what you have to do is just consider those elements and then just to plug in to the user MHV amplitudes of N equal 4. And the resulting expression is like this one. So here, those represents the specific elements appearing in this Weber gauge series. Now, since, first we should view those in the N equal 4, we first should see this is calculating some N equal 4 amplitudes. So then we should consider the N plus 2, the permutations for these arbitrary numbers. Now, these things, these additional factors are coming from the N equal 4 amplitudes, so we can just retain those. Now, the interesting thing is that even though we are considering these larger permutations, but only if we consider the consecutive, the SUN1, the factors here, and the SUN2 factors here, so only in those cases, such amplitudes are surviving. So instead of considering the the permutations of the N plus N plus 2 objects, the remaining thing, which is, should survive, these structures is that we should consider just the M permutations within the SUN1 gauge vectors and the N gauge, N permutations within SUN2 gauge vectors. So only such combination should survive. And it turns out that this automatically takes care of the previous expression. So one can see that the resulting expression would be the same as the previous the MHV amplitudes involving the quarks of the bifundamentals. So this is a simple exercise one can try. And using the similar method, one can also consider some suitable embedding of the U1 gauge theories with the charged fermions, and by doing the same exercise, one can obtain the amplitudes from the N equal 4. So basically, if we consider some orbifold projections of the N equal 4 super amplitudes, then at least for the three-level amplitudes, by considering the suitable orbifold actions, one can obtain the three-level amplitudes of the resulting gauge theories. And then those orbifold actions should be transferred should be considered in the topological strings as well. So by doing that, we can establish the equivalence or the correspondence between the super twist orbifolds and the orbifold of the field theory of N equal 4. So those are the what we have done in our paper. So here I'm going to conclude. So we work out the Witten's correspondence for lower supersymmetric gauge theories and amplitudes. And then the super orbifolds and the super toric geometries could be important in understanding some aspects of gauge theories. So if we consider the super orbifolds, there are lots of the orbifold actions we can consider in N equal 4. It means is that we can also have the last of the super orbifolds of the CP3 over 4, which should have some implications for the various, I mean, the spasmatic gait theories induced from the N equal 4 cases. So these super orbifolds, or the super manifolds in general, are probably not just some phantom, I mean, the objects. I mean, probably we should have some definite the physical meanings related to the gauge theories. So probably it might be worthwhile to consider or to investigate some aspects of the super manifolds in general. And the mirror symmetry for the supertonic manifolds could be an interesting issue, but we have not delved into those fields yet. And also, the important thing is that all I have done, I mean, all I have said so far is just about the open string sectors of such super orbifolds, and we did not understand the closed string sectors of those. So probably in order to understand properly those super orbifolds, or the super manifolds in general, the investigation of the twist sectors of such orbifolds should be important, but unfortunately we don't have any clues. So hopefully, I mean, we can report some progresses, I mean, in those sections. So probably I'm going to stop here, and thank you.